So what we're gonna be doing is I'm gonna be calling upon people, and then she's gonna bring you the mic, and I'm gonna read you a question, and it's just called old-timer questions. Okay, so do we have a Lacey Tell? Lacey Tell? Lacey Tell. All right, what does easy does it mean?
Don't take yourself so seriously. And try to know how to pause, back up, pray, and just take it easy. Don't take yourself so seriously. Thanks.
How do you deal with your character
defects? You mean to repeat it? How do you deal with your character defects in daily life?
I have a wife.
We've been married 62 years. So it's rather easy to take care of character defects because I can do them on the fly. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous has helped me with those character defects, the steps and doing the things that I'm supposed to be doing, what the book tells me to do. Step 10 is probably something that I've worked on the hardest over the last 5 years, because I am one who I have a mouth that seems to get going before my brain gets going, and so I say a lot of things that I shouldn't be saying, and the 10th step has really been a blessing in my life and working for me and working with others, so thanks for letting me share.
Sure. And Lacey had 30 years, by the way, and Mel has 51 years. Wayne S. How do you stay excited about AA?
How do you stay excited about AA?
How do I stay excited? Stay involved. That's how I stay excited about it. Working with others. Coming to things like this and other things in my local area, staying involved with my home group and being active. You know, that's how I stay excited. It's kind of a all-encompassing question, though, because it's all of it, AA, you know, like you said, 10-step work and the growth and the fellowship around me. It's just been a wonderful thing, so. I get excited about coming to things like this.
He has 43 years, everyone. Bob Nall. How do you bring another into the rooms of AA?
Oh, I heard it.
Okay. I'm Bob. I am an alcoholic. And I got to sit down. Yeah, I did. How do I bring an into the rooms? Most people look at me and they go, Jesus Christ, how are you still alive today? If you can do it, anybody can. And I'm just another patient in here. I don't know. And the fact that I don't know is a good thing. I know one thing for sure is I am not the smartest person in this room. I might be sitting next to one of them, but I'm just really grateful that this program is here. Because I'd be dead if it wasn't, you know. I don't know. Bring somebody into the... I sure can't tell them what to do. If somebody reaches out and asks me something, I can tell them what I did wrong, and that was I thought I was too smart for it and never listened to anybody. You know, and the more I go to these meetings, being in here beats the hell out of being out there, you know? So, I don't know. I knew I shouldn't have put my name down. You know? And I was kind of hoping nobody would find out how many years I got, because for as long as I've been around, I should be a lot wiser. You have to make mistakes to gain wisdom, and I made a lot of mistakes, so I should be wise instead of just a wise ass. But you know what? I have a lot of fun doing this now. And where it says we're not a glum lot, nobody is going to want to be in here and sit around and listen to meetings where people are complaining about this, that, and the other. We all know what it was like. What I like to hear is how somebody got slapped upside the head and got their butt woke up and what they're doing about it now and living in the solution and not the problem, you know? And I just didn't know any better because, you know, I thought I knew everything. But what was Einstein said? You can't solve your current problems at the same level of thinking that you used to create them. And the very first page in the big book is blank. You know why? Because I didn't know shit.
Thank you. Everyone, he has 42 years. Ricky Goodright, I think. I think it's Goodright. How old were you when you realized AA is more about... A is more than drinking.
Oh my gosh. Thing is, I watch TV, you know, like the Andy Griffith Show, you know, they had that drunk guy always in the drunk tank, you know? And that's what I always thought alcoholics were, you know? And I didn't know that this really existed because they didn't really show that on TV. You know, that's all I did was watch a lot of TV. But when I ended up in the hospital with my liver hurting, they asked me if I wanted help. You know, the alcohol in me was yelling no, but something inside of me came out and said, yes, I want help. And so that's pretty much it. I got to outpatient treatment, but that didn't work because I kept drinking. And I'm sitting there going, well, if this didn't work, what's next? You know, I thought that was the end of the road there, was that outpatient treatment and going to AA meetings. And I go, well, if this doesn't work, I'm doomed. You know, I'm doomed to die. But I found out there's another program where they put you in a treatment center, like a halfway house. So I went through a halfway house, and I was there for about 3 months. And it was kind of unusual because when I walked through that front door, I drank up until midnight that night when I got there. And they asked me, you know, when was your last drink? I said midnight. This was on January 11th, 1993. And they said, oh, well, that's going to be the last drink you take for the rest of your life. And I sat there. I'm going, I sure hope you're right. I really do. Because I didn't think he was. But he was. And, like, you know, a lot of things in here to keep me here, I had to do a complete 180 from what I was. I like to isolate and stay away from people and just not do anything. And I had to go out, reach my hand out, talk to people, just do everything I wasn't used to. And since that's been going on, been doing that, it's just been wonderful. And, you know, I got to keep coming to these rooms in order to stay sober, like, you know, somebody with kidney disease, where they go through dialysis, or diabetic, they got to get their insulin. I got to get my medication through here, through this, you guys here helping me. That's it.
33 years, everybody. Debbie V.
Say that again one time.
Debbie V. Spiritual life.
What do I do to maintain my spiritual life? I go to meetings. I talk to other alcoholics. I pray a lot. You know, all the things they taught me in the beginning. My sobriety date is February 2nd, 1993. And I was thinking when you asked that guy about, I know this is off the subject, but that's what I do. I am who I am. But anyhow, when I realized it wasn't just about not drinking, I was crazier than a bedbug. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't want to listen to anybody. I didn't want anything you guys had. I didn't think the women knew how to drink because they still had husbands and houses and cars and jobs. And I'm like, geez, these girls don't know how to drink. But anyhow, I was really nuts, and I went to a meeting, and a man talked about raging. And I was a rager. And I wasn't drinking, but I was still raging. And I kept going back out because I felt so bad about how I was acting and I wasn't drinking. So, and as far as maintaining my spiritual, I just have to do what I've always done. Go to my meetings, talk to my sponsor. Not very often, but I didn't like her either. Anyhow, that's all I have. I'm really grateful to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. She has 33 years, everybody. Ray Korsman. Has your understanding of the 12 steps evolved over the years?
Definitely. Yeah, I think like so many, I got here, thought life was over. All I wanted to do was quit drinking. And all I wanted to do was not get kicked out of the Navy. And, you know, I came here, and I guess on the second step, when I talk about it, I kind of say that, you know, I had this desperate hope that maybe this thing would work, and now I absolutely know it works. And so, and that came about by listening to people, and my faith in a higher power came about, you know, when we all say, I believe we all have the same story with sometimes really, really different circumstances. But the story is the same, you know. I didn't have a choice, and some power gets in between my impulse to drink and the in the action. So, I'm grateful for the program, and through participating is how it's changed over the years. Thank you.
It's 47 years, everybody. Hey, Deb H. What is your biggest challenge to staying sober after 30 years?
You know, the saying about the further you away are from your drink, or no, the more time you have, the closer you are to your next drink. I think continuing to learn and continuing to grow, continuing to take an inventory and know when you're wrong, I think that's very important. I guess in the really big picture is, I didn't have the meetings and I didn't do what I needed to do, I would fall back to where I was when I was drinking. And so nothing is really, I mean, everything has changed. You know, when you come in the program, you only have to change one thing, and that's everything. And that's what happened, is I had to change everything. And every day is a new day. I mean, there are things that worked yesterday that aren't going to work today. So I think it relates to that boredom question about how you don't become bored with meetings. And when I become bored with meetings, I know I'm in trouble. So that's, you know, that's the rumble on the road. So that's what I got.
Thank you. She has 40 years, everybody. Lauren, you? How do you guard against complacency and keep your program free?
I'm Lauren, alcoholic. You know, I just try to stay active in the program. You know, and that means, for me, going to a lot of meetings. It also means participating in all levels of service and trying to keep my program fresh. Complacency, for me, would lead maybe not to drinking right away, but it would lead to the life that I used to live before I got here. I never, ever want to go back to that again. So I do what I need to do, you know, to stay active, try to practice some form of spirituality, and do a lot of reading, and do a little bit of prayer and meditation every day to keep it going. So anyway, that's what I have. Thanks.
It's 49 years, everyone. Becky Parker. Okay. Joe M.
Joe M.
How has the culture of AA changed since you first came in?
Well, it's changed a lot, and it's changed not at all. I remember reading an article in the Grapevine, the Best of the Grapevine, and it was a story that the date was like 1951 or something like that, and they were talking about how the program was getting diluted. We talk about the same thing today, but, you know, I think it has a lot to do with what meetings you go to. Not all meetings are the same. I like to go to meetings where we talk about solutions and not whine about our predicament. As one of my former sponsors once says, we all know how we got here, now what are we going to do about it? So to me, the program is still the program if you want to look for it. And it's essential that the old timers keep it going. You know, we talk about the traditions and we don't lose sight of what our primary purpose is, and that's to work with the other alcoholic and to help them to stay sober. Thanks.
He is 38 years. Alan M. Jimmy.
Jimmy's not here. Okay.
Bob H. Why do you still need a sponsor after all the years?
Pardon? Why do you need a sponsor after all these years?
Well, I gotta have somebody that's gonna help me look in up here. And if I can tell them the truth, generally they don't have to say anything because I hear it as soon as I say it out loud. I expect a lot of us have had that experience. You think up something that's absolutely brilliant until you tell somebody else. Yeah. I would like to share a couple of stories. I'll try to do it quickly that have happened along the way. I was living in Pocatello, Idaho, for goodness sakes, and I was, like 4 or 5 years sober, and we had an old man in the program, about as old as I am now, and he was kind of frail, he had a frail voice, and he'd get out the side of the podium, and he'd shake his finger like at us like that, telling us how it's supposed to be done. And about half made me madden, but then I softened on that. A short time later, he came in the store where I was working, had a little tiny children's record player, and that's what he used to listen to his records on, and it wasn't working. And I tried putting a new needle in it, and that didn't work, and it was shot. And I told him that, and he was disappointed. And sometime later, a week or two, whatever it was, I was visiting another store, and they had a little stereo system there that we'd had that was discontinued, discounted to nothing. So I bought it, and it cost me $20, and took it back, and some other friends of ours gave it to old Bill. And shortly after that, he landed in the hospital with cancer. And he knew he wasn't going to come out feet first. He told these friends, make sure Bob gets that record player back so he can give it to somebody else. the man was dying. He was still thinking about what he could do for somebody else. I learned a lot from that old man. And I hope I can do something similar for somebody someday.
He is 49 years. Ann M. Sandy Mulligan. What step do you think helped you the most? What step do you think helped you the most?
Step two. I think it allowed me to find a higher power that I could understand. And I grew up in a religion where it was a punishing God and a God that, you know, would never accept me. So when I was able to have a higher power of my own understanding, it opened so many doors for me and allowed me to grow in my sobriety and know that, you know, I can do this. For some reason, I just felt like when my sponsor told me that, you know, my higher power was going to be of my own understanding, whatever I wanted that to be, you know, it had never crossed my mind. You know, I always thought that there was just this one particular God and that was going to be it. So that step, I think, was the one that really opened the door for me and really allowed me to continue to move through the steps and get a bunch of sobriety. Thanks.
She is 30 years. Tony Pignotti. Patio. What was your spiritual awakening, if you had one?
Wow. Patty, alcoholic. Well, I kind of said it in a thing this morning. I was on a panel, and I think really what really got to me, because I thought, I don't feel spiritual. I don't feel like I'm getting it. I don't understand why everybody's looking like, everything's wonderful, and I'm going, what am I missing? And then what happened is, as I took each step, especially step four, but as I took each step, I started looking at things a little bit different, and then the major thing was actually working with others. It was actually seeing the light come on in someone else's eyes, because I don't know about you guys, but when I was out drinking, I didn't really care about you guys. I only cared about me. And so when I started actually caring about somebody else and what they were doing and how they were going to get this deal, because I wanted to pass it on. I was told I'm just supposed to pass on what was so freely given to me. And when I started doing that, all of a sudden, I'm like going, wow, wow. I mean, that was the biggest spiritual awakening and spiritual experiences that I've had is working with other women. So that's about all I can say about that. Thanks.
She's 32 years, everyone. Scott Knopf. What is faith and how does faith work?
Try that again. What was it?
What is faith and how does faith work?
What is faith and how does faith work?
I'm hard of hearing, so I'll probably yell at you too loud. Wow. I didn't have any faith when I walked in the doors of AA, but I found people sitting in my home group meeting that I had known. I grew up in a small town in Washington State, and we, all of us drunks, knew who we were. You know, it was pretty small. And I walked into my very first meeting, and here's people I knew, and they were sober, and that was the start of my growth in faith. I would love to tell you that I became a spiritual giant my first meeting, but the truth was is I had to do a little soul searching first, and after a good four step, and I started believing that there was a possibility that I could be a decent human being also, you know, and one of the deals that I've really enjoyed the most is I sat with a guy in the Safeway parking lot one night, and he was suicidal, and he had a gun that was loaded. And we sat there all night, and on the way down, I said a prayer with four-letter words in it because I didn't know what else to do. And by the time the night was over, I heard things come out of my mouth that are not of my own experience. And I wondered how that happened and where that came from. And when the night was over and it was 6 o'clock in the morning and we were still in the Safeway parking lot, he still had the gun, but I had the bullets. You know? And on the way home, I knew where the words came from that came out of my mouth. And it wasn't my own, but it was God's way of showing me that there really is one. I'm not it, but if I'm willing to let go and be open, that's where my faith comes from. So,
he's 42 years. Al Segato. Dave D. The book says nothing will ensure sobriety more than working with another alcoholic, but I'm afraid to try to sponsor. What tips do you have?
Oh, boy. My name is Dave Dover, alcoholic. I'm also from Port Townsend, Washington, and these are some of my dearest friends here, and I have a very loving wife who has many years in Al-Anon, a few more than I have. You know, I have a home group, okay? And yet I also, and I've been at that home group when we first got it started. I was a merchant seaman, and I actually started it behind my back while I was still at sea, but came home and I said, hey, Dave, we got this thing going on at the lighthouse, because one of our guys had he was an epileptic. And his wife was packing everybody up and going into the meeting, and then they had to pack the kids up and come back and pick them up and everything. Anyway, Rover's been around for a long, long time. We're a group that goes around to different people's homes, and COVID kind of knocked the shit out of us, but we still are hanging in there. And we were there last night. It's Thursday night in Port Townsend, and we had to get together out of Country Roads because they were in, anyway. The answer to this story is that I also have to be willing and available when somebody calls me up and says, you know, we got this noon meeting going on down at the Hadlock Hall. And I said, yeah, I know about it and everything. It's a white slipper group where they kind of come in and they go out. They come in and they go out. They said, why don't you go and share that for a while? And that's what I started doing. And then I also started showing up at other days. That wasn't just on Tuesdays at noon. And you know what? Some of those suckers are actually getting sober. Some of them are dying, you know, but some of them are getting sober. And it's a small group, but you know what? I get to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous that we don't drink here, that I get from my home group, which is Rovers, into this beginners meeting at Hadlock Fellowship Hall, another little town just right next door to us. Thanks for letting me share.
And that is, he has 47 years. Well, that was the last question anyway. Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for being here.